If I was an American citizen, I wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton if you paid me. You can go out. You can beat the pollsters. You can beat the commentators. You can beat Washington. And you'll do it by doing what we did for Brexit in Britain.
That's Nigel Farage, who is the leader of the Brexit movement. Emma Thompson, now that you've heard what he has to say, your comments of his foray into U.S. election politics?
Well, there are no words, really. Nigel Farage is a, you know, I mean, he's a nationalist. He's a white nationalist. And that's what Donald Trump is. And so it's very distressing.
And what do you mean by white nationalist?
When you say white nationalist,
what do you mean?
I mean, I feel that in some ways the less said about Donald Trump, the better. But I do see that it is a terrifying situation. And actually, Mr. Prashad, who I was listening to earlier, was so wonderful on the subject because he said from the outside looking in, one of the things that actually I mean, obviously, if I were an American citizen, I'd be voting for Clinton. And one of the reasons for that is that she understands the reality of climate change. It is extraordinary that any person with anything really between their two ears could deny climate change at this point. I mean, that is an act of such extraordinary denial in the face of 98% of the world scientists coming out and saying, actually, you know what, it is. Even the IPCC, which is normally quite a sort of gentle commentator on it, says we're in really big trouble now and we really have to act. So if he does get into power, he's going to have an awful lot to deal with on that front. But it is terrifying from every point of view. I did agree with Mr. Prashad, though. I agree.
Emma Thompson, we're going to have to leave it there. That does it for our show. Academy Award-winning actress and longtime activist. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. Non-commercial educational radio. All volunteer student and alumni staff, except for yours truly and a couple of others. And upcoming now is our weekly public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.fm. Thanks for being with us today. Today is August 26, 2016, and it's our last show of August. But every show is our last show for that day, so just another way of looking at that. I do want to say, since it is August 26, that happy birthday to the Mini Automobile. And you say, well, is this going to be a commercial? No, but where is it here? Where is it? Oh, my gosh. I'll find it. I'm looking everywhere. I'll find it. I got it. Okay. According to the History Channel. By the way, sitting here listening to this mess that I've already started creating is John Conroy, our WHFR News Director. Welcome, John.
Hi, Jay. It's good to be here.
It's a pretty busy day out here on the campus today because actually the fall semester started yesterday, so you had to walk a little bit further from the parking lots today.
I got a good workout this morning.
We do have a lot of wonderful parking lots spread out all around campus for everybody that wants to come here as a student, and they're free. But you got to walk. So it's now handicap people, you do have an option there. Once you're a student on campus, you can use a couple of handicap spots that are available, but they fill up fast. Back to the Mini story. Okay, on this day in 1959, the British Motor Corporation, BMC, which no longer exists, launched its newest car for 1959, the small, affordable Mini, and it was called the Mark 1 Mini. In fact, it believe it or not, 1959, that's, oh my gosh, almost 50 years ago, well, 45, 46, $800. That's all it cost. But that was almost 50 years ago. So the diminutive Mini went on to become one of the best-selling British cars in history. And it's kind of interesting how that started. There was an international crisis in 1956 that had to do with the Suez Canal, about who was going to control it, whether it be Egypt or, you know, somebody else, like Britain, England, and or America. And so it seems that Gamal Abdel Nasser, he was president of Egypt at the time, nationalized the Suez Canal in response to the American and British decision to withdraw funding for a new dam's construction due to Egypt's communist ties at the time. Now we're not going to worry about that. We're worrying about other kinds of ties, and I don't mean the ones around the neck. Anyway, the international crisis that followed led to fuel shortages and gasoline rationing across Europe. So Sir Leonard Lloyd, head of BMC, formed by the merger of automakers Austin and Morris in 1952, wanted to produce a British alternative to the tiny, fuel-efficient German cars that were cornering the market after the Suez crisis. Of course, one of them was the Volkswagen. Yes, the Volkswagen, which was a British car, was a German car ever since World War II, officially, actually, the people's car, Volkswagen, Volkswagen. Actually, Volkswagen. I believe the V is pronounced F, or RF, and you can see it's the wagon. It's the transport of the folks, of the people. Hitler actually came up with the idea for that and encouraged that kind of car to be produced. But after he was gone, became very successful, especially around 55, 56, around this crisis, because it got really good gas economy too, very fuel efficient, as did the Mini. Okay, and it's interesting that the Sir Leonard Lloyd, who was head of BMC at the time, he turned to Alec Isoganis, who was a Turkish immigrant who, as chief engineer at Morris Motors, had produced the Morris Minor, a teapot-shaped cult favorite that had nonetheless never seriously competed with the Volkswagen Beetle. So just giving credit to immigrants here, part of the story, and from Turkey, okay, all right, from the Middle East. That's how the Mini got started. And 2.5 years later, in 1959, August 26, today, it came to be on the market. And it was called both the Austin 7 and also the Morris Mini Minor. There was a more competitive version called the Mini Cooper. Now, unfortunately, that car, the production of the Mini was halted in 2000, so it hasn't been a continuous run. And in 2003, 3 years later, the Mini Cooper was, the company was bought by BMW, Bayerische Motor und Werken, in Bavaria, BMW, and it's still manufactured in England. Well, most of them are. They have a sort of a station wagon size, small, very small station wagon called the Countryman, which at this point is made in Austria, but under license from BMW, of course. But most of the other BMWs, including the one that I have right now, that's my baby, because it's so small, I can call it a baby, you know, practically. I have a lot of fun with that car. It's very... very easy to drive around in the city because it's very small and quick. So so it's not just a plug for the Mini Cooper. It's it's actually how it all began and what was the cause of it. So there was a political cause, the Suez Canal crisis in the Middle East, and a lack of gasoline that got it started. Oh, and I get 34 miles to a gallon on the highway. So let me just end by saying that. Yeah. Wait, John. There you go. Okay.
It just allows you to be nimble and quick, Jay.
or drive a lot further than I normally would and burn up more gas than usual. Unfortunately. But just a happy little point there. But today is August 26th, and there's a lot of news, a lot of things happening in Dearborn around the area. So we're going to get to that right now. I certainly want to get to and fill you in on all the people who now we know are going to be on the ballot for the school board, the local school board election coming up in November, along with that. I think somebody else is up for election too in November. Can't quite remember which office, but it's kind of important. President of the United States of America.
And
representatives both at the state level and other level. And so
judgeships,
of course, proposals on the ballot for local funding. So a lot of stuff is happening, and WHFR Journal is going to be there. We're here now, and we will try to cover everything we can that you don't normally hear about anywhere else. So we might do some, rather than incumbents and people you know, we might do just the challengers, the newbies, and see what they have to say and what they're all about. Okay, looking quickly back, we do have an editorial from last Sunday's Press and Guide from Regan Ford. And Regan, we actually met for the first time. If you're a regular listener to this show, you know that we feature his opinions in the editorial columns that he writes and donates to the Press and Guide and sometimes to the Times Herald also. And he has some interesting opinions, and we've talked about them before. But what was amazing was that we actually met him at Dearborn Homecoming. And John is shaking his head. He's going to remember this. We had someone who was standing there while we were doing the journal show live, you and I, sitting there at the WHFR broadcasting booth at Homecoming. And there's somebody standing out in front of us, sort of, I think about halfway through the show, listening to us and nodding. And after the show was over, he introduced himself. He was Regan Ford. By golly. And I said, do you know? He said, I didn't know there was such a program like the Journal that would talk about local things and local issues and have opinions. I didn't know that existed before. I said, well, did you know we featured your opinions from the paper on this show, too? So it was all, fun and positive and,
love fest.
And so on. Yes,
yeah.
Love fest. So yeah. I invited him to be on the show sometime if he wanted to. He said, we have to be very careful what he says these days, even in the paper, because he has just recently been appointed the president of the Rotary Club of Dearborn. Mm-hmm. So he can't go around those crazy wild opinions. Not that he ever had them, but he was a little critical of some of the things in Dearborn in a positive way, giving suggestions and so on, the former things. And I think that's good public service before, but he does want to represent all of the business people in the Rotary Club, so...
Yeah, and without telling us his name, he right away you could see that he was more than just a passing interest in the radio station and what we were doing. He was actually paying attention to the words we were talking about on the radio.
Yep. So I'm going to feature his opinion in just a minute. It's not the hard news that we usually start with on this show, but we'll get to that. So we'll move to this last Wednesday, August 24th, looking at the Press and Guide. Councilwoman plans fireworks law action day. The article from Andrea Blum says, the smoke has cleared on another 4th of July, but one city leader, in Dearborn Heights, by the way, folks, is leading an effort to make sure subsequent celebrations are safer. An action day for residents concerned with the use and safety of fireworks is set for September 21st in Lansing. Let me check my big... calendar here. What day could September 21st be? Would that be a weekend, do you think? Would that get a lot of people to go to Lansing? Well, guess what? There's no legislators there on the weekends. And pretty much none there on Fridays either. If they work at all, it's a four-day week.
A four-day week.
And that's not every week.
No.
Because they've been off for a couple months also. No disrespect here necessarily, but it's kind of like a part-time legislature, except they're not paid to be part-time, but that's just the way that's set up. The 21st happens to be a Wednesday, so I can't go because I teach a class on Wednesday, so there you go. But Lisa Hicks Clayton, hyphenated Hicks Clayton, is the one that is sponsoring the Dearborn Heights resolution to repeal PA 256. She'll lead a lobby group of city residents in Lansing on September 21st. And so there's a lot of reasons that people might want to repeal this sort of blanket sale of all kinds of fireworks to the average person, which was put in place by the Michigan legislature a couple of years ago, 2011, actually. And because, Michigan is losing a lot of business, because everybody's going to Toledo, to Ohio, to buy their fireworks, and we want all that business in Michigan. Well, it turns out some of these fireworks places are sort of fly by night or fly under the table, and they don't pay many taxes. They're not there year round. I'm not sure it's the kind of businesses we necessarily want in Michigan. And legislature, though, being Republican dominated, seems to think anything good for business except allowing Tesla to sell its cars in Michigan itself. Everything else, there's plenty of other manufacturers that can market their products directly in Michigan. But not anybody that makes an automobile. Well, that's just crazy. If competition is good for the soul, as most Republicans would admit, they should let Tesla and anybody else that's making cars, according to, of course, the standard federal guidelines and whatever for safety and all that, they should allow them to sell in Michigan. If it's direct to the public, and GM doesn't like that, and they're losing sales, or Ford and Chrysler are losing sales, maybe they'll decide to open their own dealerships and see what happens. I mean, it's just competition, folks. If that's the way people want it, if they just, you know, pay one price, deal directly online, get your car delivered to you. There's local service facilities. Right now, there is one local Tesla service facility in the Detroit area, but they don't sell. They can only service. And there's many Tesla superchargers, which are free all around the country in major populated areas and along major expressways where you can charge up if needed for free. But the superchargers only work on Teslas, of course.
Right.
So if you have some other kind of electric car like a Nissan Leaf or the new Chevy Volt, the old Volt and the new Bolt, which is the all-electric Chevy car coming out, they're using different sockets. Even the BMW uses a different kind of socket than you can't use the super. The supercharger is fast, too. Something like 20 minutes, you get like not a full charge, but about 150 miles or something in 20 minutes and for free. So pretty impressive. But I'm just saying. So she's going to do a little field trip on Wednesday the 21st to Lansing, and you should contact, especially from Dearborn, her about that. Apparently State Senator David Kinesic, who is also from Dearborn Heights, but sort of the spokesperson for the entire Democratic Party of Michigan, and we've talked to him several times on the show, and even gave him the WHFR bump to get his career started years ago. He just happened to be on the show before he won his first election. Anyway, they've introduced legislative packages in the House to do that repeal of the 2011 Public Act 256 that allows for the big fireworks sales. So if you'd like to be part of that, great. It's a time for field trips, too. I saw somewhere else, maybe it was in the Arab American News, is that Senator Gary Peters is starting a motorcycle tour of Michigan. About 15 places. I think he's up for re-election as a state senator to Washington, D.C., and he admits he's been a motorcyclist since his youth. And I'm thinking, what a great excuse that can be paid for by your campaign funds to have a 15-day trip across Michigan and back. That's great. I'm sure he'll do it safely. And it's fairly good weather these days, except last week for a few of those downpours. But
it has been good, much better, a little cooler too, which is good.
Yes, we all approve of that. Yes, and my grass has turned green again. So
good.
It was touch and go there. I was at English Gardens because a couple of the bushes I planted in the spring didn't take. They turned brown, and that's only like 3 months ago. They turned totally brown. They were evergreens, but they were ever brown when I turned them in. They had changed a little bit. Never happened in my whole history of 50 years of planting bushes around houses. He said, yep. The guy, I talked to one of their big experts over there, and he said, yep, it's the worst year ever for bushes dying.
Well, and I know evergreens need a moist base.
They have to be properly planted. He gave me a couple extra tips, but that I hadn't thought of in 40 years, but 50 years. But I don't think that was it. I think just even though I tried to water like every 3 days or so, it was just we had almost a solid drought for about 5 weeks there, and it was over 90 high every day here, with just little sprinkles every now and then. So if you're not watering a lot, of course you can overwater and kill bushes too, but I don't think I was doing that. It's been a bad time. Also, for you climate change deniers. This last July was the hottest month of record this year, and in fact, ever. And so far, this has been the hottest year of recorded history ever. So that's a trend we've been mentioning almost every single year. So something radical is changing here. And, you know, I don't care if you say, well, it's just the planets going around the sun. It has nothing to do with all the global pollution. And still, we've got to do something to diminish those problems and those effects. We have to change our lifestyles. We have to find a new way of energy generation, build a better electrical grid so we turn on all those air conditioners and right. thing doesn't shut down. I'm just saying, folks, it's been warm and it's taken a sacrifice here. Let's see what else is here. Well, in case you're not hot enough, there is, when is it coming up? August 27th, that's tomorrow. All right, very relevant here on the new WHFR Journal. In fact, if you're listening to the podcast, you might have missed this. After 2 o'clock, go to WHFR.fm and click on the WHFR Journal button and pick the date. You can listen to any of our shows over again or for the first time. But if you wait too long, you'll miss our up-to-date weekend entertainment notes. To help with the raising money and Dearborn Heights firefighters, they're having their 24th annual chili cook-off. And there'll be some chili there from 24 years ago, too. No, there won't. It's all fresh. It's all brand new. And it takes place from noon until dusk at the Upper Parkland Park on Ann Arbor Trail between Outer Drive and Evergreen. That's not far from here, John, Henry Ford College main campus. Yeah. No, my goodness. And there'll also be all kinds of other things. There'll be a family picnic area, raffles, food and beverages from the Rusted Crow Distillery. That sounds like a toxic sort of thing. I'm sorry, alcoholic, perhaps. Face painting, children's games, a dunk tank, a moonwalk, and a fire engine water show. Mm-hmm. So there's also a raffle that you're invited to participate in. It'll also raise money for the firefighters. And there'll be more than $5,000 in prizes. So, and of course, I love chili. Any time of the year, I make my own batch once a week for myself. Think I'm going to share it with anybody else? No, it's too special. And most other people can't take the heat, literally, because right. I make it very spicy. Oh, yeah. So okay. I don't want to cause havoc to anybody else's intestines. But and so they strive out there to raise at least $10,000 each year, enough to send about 20 children to the camp at a cost of $500 per child. So a very, very good purpose for that. So, again, that's the 24th Annual Dearborn Heights Firefighters Chili Cook-Off tomorrow, August 27th, Saturday, noon until dusk at Upper Parkland Park on Ann Arbor Trail between Outer Drive and Evergreen. Go and have some fun. Tonight, also, it's the last outdoor concert of the season in West Dearborn. Okay, and there's not an East Dearborn either. That's also over. But tonight in the parking lot behind the Bryant Library, the concert and the food truck rally is going on too early in the afternoon. Who's going to be playing?
The Beatles tribute band, the Beat Club.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they've performed before, and I can't remember the other Beatles tribute band, which is. Been performing around this area for many, many years, once at homecoming, but the Beat Club has a good reputation.
I think it's Tupperware, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I don't think so.
Tribute or Tupperware. I thought it was something with a T. Maybe not Tupperware.
Maybe they just call themselves the Tribute Band or something. Okay. No, but anyway, fun begins at 5 p.m. tonight, and West Dearborn runs until 9, so you can get there and check out the food trucks, a variety of food, craft beer garden is also on the site, and the events are organized by the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority. And then they think that, the story ended with the fact that they had a final concert at Dearborn Hills Golf Course last night.
Last night, right.
Yeah, that's over with. Okay. So I'm not sure what time the music starts. I think 6 or 7, probably.
5 o'clock tonight. 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, it says 5.
Fun, but I think, fun begins at 5.
Yeah, I think that 9. Could be. I don't think the music starts at 5. But but anyway, be there and enjoy. It's going to be pretty nice weather, I think. So not any rain or anything. Also, this Sunday, might as well get this out of the way in one single segment here. There's a benefit for the Dearborn Historical Museum. They're not yet, anyway, doing. They'll probably wait till October. You know, the German thing, the drinking thing at the end of October. What's
Beer
it
Fest
called?
Oktoberfest.
Oktoberfest. Of course, it's in October. That's why it's called Oktoberfest. But no, they've had beer tasting or beer sampling fundraisers for the Dearborn Historical Museum, I think twice last year, and they got a lot of money out of that. A lot of people showed up for that. But this time it's called Pasta for Paint.
Yeah.
Okay, give the personal chef the night off and fill up on carbs, and it's going to be Sunday, this Sunday, the 28th, and it'll be right there at the Dearborn Historical Museum. It will have not only the pasta to eat, but beverages. There's also games, bocce ball, music, and an art area for kids. Now, tickets, because they're trying to raise money, folks, tickets are $15 for adults, and I guess it's all you can eat, I assume. How much pasta can you eat? Oh, my God, there's a question. $7 for children. You can purchase them in advance at museum. It doesn't say they're any cheaper in advance, though, but and that's from 3:30 to 7 p.m. in the North Shelter. Oh, it's not. Don't go to the Historical Museum. I'm sorry. I think I said that. You have to go to Ford Field Park. Okay.
Right up the street.
North Shelter of Ford Field Park. And I think it's over the bridge.
Over the bridge.
And
right.
To the right. Yep. I think it's the big Italian shelter there. Because if you're going to serve pasta, it's got to be at the Italian shelter.
To the Italian place, right?
I think so. Yeah. But no, that doesn't mean anything. Anyways, called the North Shelter, and I'm pretty sure it's down on the field of Ford Field Park. Free parking there at Ford Field, you know. It's only homecoming when they charge. So that'll be this Sunday from 3:30 to 6 p.m. Come and help support the Dearborn Historical Museum. I'm sure they'll have some really good carbs there for you. All right. Let's see. I think that's, why did I say the second section here? Or the third section. Sometimes there's nothing in there. And I just brought them because I love the sound of pages turning on the air. Yes, absolutely. Huh. Okay. Let's see. 25 after. Well, we don't want to make people wait too long for the lead story. The lead story is just the names of the six candidates for the three seats. Imagine the odds there. 50% chance of winning.
There you go.
Depending on what you're running for on the Dearborn School Board. And here's the story. It was first in the Arab American News on their website as of this morning. I'm sure you'll probably see it in the Press and Guide Times Herald next week. But in case you're wondering, there are three vacant seats, and here's how it goes. The two full-term vacant seats are made available because, first of all, Roxanne McDonald chose to try to run for 15th District Rep and didn't win in the primary, and she is forbidden from running again, like being on the ballot in November. Now, I don't quite understand that or who made that rule up. I don't think it's a state of Michigan rule, but, you know, it's true. If she won in the primary, then she'd be on the November ballot. And maybe there is some state rule that you can't run for two offices on the same ballot. But I don't think they should have forbidden her to run again if she wanted to, if she didn't win. If she didn't win in August, that's 3 months back from November, well, then there wouldn't be any conflict. She'd only be on the ballot once. But just the potential for being on the ballot twice.
Right. But you can understand how others would want to be considered for another position as well. You know, she's not the only one that lost.
Still, there's so many situations where it seems like a politician is running for two offices almost at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 3 months away. The primary was 3 months away from the main ballot. And so it'd be interesting somehow, if I had the time to research it, exactly where is the specific rule? Is it in the school board rules, or is it in the Dearborn rules somehow, in the city of Dearborn charter, or is it a state law? Because I know things are different elsewhere, and there are people that can run almost at the same time for two offices, and then they get to choose which one they want, which I don't know if you think that's fair or not, but I'm just saying.
Well, I would think that, I mean, because people want to, if there's folks that are interested in being public servants, that would be a thing we'd want to encourage.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to make it harder for them. You know?
Well, we want to have as many openings as possible, in a way, for new people to come in with new ideas, hopefully, and new energy in that. But anyway, Roxanne McDonald, her term will expire next year, I think January 1st. And it says in the article, they are not seeking re-election. Oh, the other person I didn't mention yet is Joseph Guido, who's been on the board for at least 23 years. I think I saw 23 years in a recent article about him. And for one reason or another, he's decided not to run. So they have to fill these two terms. They're six-year terms. Oh, my gosh, it chokes me up to think about that. You know, we have two-year terms for our representatives in Lansing. So do we believe that people in Lansing could get in more trouble and we've got to kick them out quicker? Do we believe that people elected to the school board get a free ride for, not a free ride, we're paying them, well, small salaries, it's a part-time job, but for 6 years? That's a major commitment, you know, to an office. Let's see, the Senate in Michigan to going to Washington, D.C., those are six-year terms, I think. Gary Peters would be up for a six-year term. But so continuity is good, of course. Anyway, so we've got four people running for two seats, the two full six-year terms. And their names are one that you already know of because he's been on the board for years and years. And then he decided to leave, what, to run for something else? Hussein Berry. What was the story? Do you remember, John? He at all this, you know, at least a dozen years or more with the school board, and maybe understating that. He was even this former school board president, but they just sort of take turns. You know, they sort of have a way of moving up, and one's the treasurer, and then one's the secretary, and then one's the president. So
they rotate them.
Yeah, it's not that he got the most votes. It's not like the city council. But nonetheless, he was school board president, I think most recently when he, and I think he tried to run for another office. Is what I think, somewhere else, and then he didn't get that. So, but maybe not. It doesn't matter. He's trying to run again, so that'll be a name you've already recognized, and we won't be directly inviting him to back on the Journal, because if you don't know Hussein Berry and his longtime career with the school board, which, remember, the school board runs K-12, but the same people convene another time each month as the Board of Trustees of Henry Cord College. So they also run the college, if you will, not on a daily basis, but they appoint the president, they approve budgets, contracts, and all that. So anyway, Hussein Berry has been here, he's done that, and he's running again. Fadwa Hamoud, no relation to Abdullah Hamoud, by the way, no relation to Susan DeBaja, whose husband's last name is actually Hamoud.
All right.
Okay. And he's not related either. A lot of Hamouds in the city, just like there's a lot of Berries.
Yeah.
I've never asked any of the Berries which other Berry they might be related to, because there's so many. You know, in this case, no connection. Anyway, Fadwa was appointed for a short term when Amy Scholes resigned to go to Ohio, and she was just picked by the board. I think she was maybe the next highest vote-getting candidate, or maybe not. I don't think it was that way. They just looked at the previous candidates, and they found out who was still interested, and they made a decision
to
go with Fadwa.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. In fact, we talked about that on the show, I'm fairly sure, is that it's interesting they didn't have an automatic succession there. They actually did interviews again with the people that they thought were interested. And so Fadwa has been there, but she wants a full six-year term. So two names you probably already know, Fadwa Hamoud, who's currently on the board, Hussein Berry, who previously was on the board for many years, and then the newbies, the non-incumbents, the challengers, if you will, Adele Mozip, M-O-Z-I-P, who's a software developer, and Kodir Farhat. Kodir Farhat has been on this show several times, but not as a candidate. So certainly we will extend an offer to Kodir Farhat to come back on the Journal as a candidate to talk a little bit about his candidacy for the board. And Adele Mozip, too. But, of course, we have to try to get in touch with them. and had some real difficulties during the primary trying to get in touch with people. Some didn't have a website until extremely late, and or a phone number, or it was very difficult for us. We don't have unlimited resources here, nor the omniscience of God to dig some of these up. So Adele Mozip, if anybody knows him, or could it be Adele? Could it be a female?
That sounds like a female to me. Huh?
Well, I mean, the singer Adele spells it A-D-E-L-L-E, but so man or woman.
A-D-E-L-E might be a female.
Right. Well, I know that's a female from reference to the famous British pop singer, but this is A-D-E-L, and it could be a man or a woman. Okay. People are always confusing my name, John. They think I'm a woman. Oh, Jay. I thought you were a woman. Not the last time I checked. Not for 70 years, anyway. I think because when I was growing up, especially in the 50s, there was she a singer or an actress? J.P. Morgan.
J.P. Morgan.
But not... You know, not there's a financier who's but it was anyway. So she was out there. I think she spelled her name J A Y E though. I don't use an E, so whatever. So those are the two challengers, if you will, to people who are already there or going to be there for the 6-year term. So the top two in November in that category, Mozip, Hamoud, Berry, and Farhat are going to be on the board for the next 6 years.
So all four of those folks are going to be challengers for the 6-year terms. Yes. Okay.
Right. So just the top two out of the four are the ones that are going to get the two offices. And then there's a partial term. And I don't quite understand. Is that the rest of Amy Scholz's term? That's must be where it came from. Okay, is it Fadwa Hamoud decided to, rather than finishing that, she wanted the full big-time 6-year term. I think that's it. So for the partial term, a Fayez El-Khali, and I'll spell that, first name F-A-I-Z-E, Fayez, I think that is, and the last name El-Khali, E-L-K-H-A-L-I, and again, Fayez, male.
I believe a male. Yep.
And Jim Thorpe. Now, I think I've heard that name around town somewhere before. I don't know where. Sorry, Jim. But he wasn't on the board before, I don't think. He might have run for the board before. Well, so one person out of the two will get the partial term. And I'm just guessing maybe there's another 2 years in the showless term. So
two people are running for one partial term.
That's right, yeah.
And that's probably 2 years of being on.
Yeah. Now, there also might be, in 2 years, another, because they stagger. They don't have them all elected at one time to the Board of Trustees. So if they get a name recognition on the board, if they win this partial, maybe just like Fadwa Hamoud did, they will want whoever wins the partial term will decide to also go for a 6-year term, because they have the name recognition from being there and the knowledge and experience, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Anyway, so those are the people, and we will try to get a fair amount of time, and I don't know if we're going to do the 30 minutes or the 20 minutes each or 15. It's not a lesser, well, it is a lesser office, and it's part-time compared to the other people we interviewed during the primary, but nonetheless, we're going to be fair and try to get interviews with each of the four people who are challengers, as I see it. Mozip, Farhat, El-Khali, and Thorpe for the local Dearborn School Board, also known other times as the Board of Trustees for Henry Ford College. Okay, there's a story on that. Mm-hmm. So it's something to try to find out about. My guess would be, of course, that the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights will have a forum, candidate forum, sometime in September or I haven't seen a schedule for September, so it might be October, and the election is going to be November 8th, of course. Yes.
All right. What else we got?
John, you have some things. I know you always have things from downriver.
I have a little recreational thing happening here. We have an end-of-summer 5-mile family fun bike ride, and this is 1 p.m. Sunday, the 28th. Young Patriots Park, Sibley Road, between Fort and Grange and Riverview. It's a free event. No pre-registration is required. What it is a bike ride through neighborhoods of Riverview. Ice cream social and the sidewalk chalk drawing will follow. There'll be prizes for decorated bikes. And for more information, you can call 734-281-4219. And it's, you know, with the cooler air coming down, it's been an excellent time for bike riding. Mm-hmm. That's been going on.
Great. Thank you. By the way, there's another birthday event today. I'll just sneak in and go back to you. But I knew I had this, but I couldn't find it, of course, at the top of the hour. Besides the mini birthday, it's the birthday of the 19th Amendment. So it's also known as Women's Equality Day because the 19th Amendment of our U.S. Constitution guarantees the women the right to vote 96 years ago. And as the League of Women Voters National Office, an email I got today from them reminds us, it still stands as a shining moment in America's ongoing journey to meet the ideals of our country's founding. Just another example, too, folks. It took 19 amendments to get women the right to vote. So a lot of people say, I'm all for the U.S. Constitution. Were you for all the amendments, too? A lot of those people say, I'm for the Constitution. Well, I guess that includes the Second Amendment, because a lot of those people, that's the only one they know of, the right to bear arms and so on, which for me means the right to wear a short sleeve shirt if I want to. I have a warped view on that, of course. But the 19th Amendment, there's a few other other important amendments, the 14th and the 15th, but we won't go into them now, came later. So if an amendment is just as good as the U.S. Constitution, what's wrong with new amendments? If you wanted to have one, right? Mm-hmm. So, but that might change the original purpose or meaning of something in the basic Constitution. Well, that's why you have an amendment process when it's time to make changes. For example, congressmen to Washington, D.C. were always, in the original U.S. Constitution, elected by a direct popular vote.
Yeah.
But not senators.
No.
No. It wasn't a direct vote. And that was changed by one of those amendments, whichever one it was. Okay, and so we all love direct popular votes. Too bad we don't have that for president of the United States yet. No, we've got this, I think, very secretive and wishy-washy, and it could be even anti-democratic if they wanted it to be, the Electoral College. It's just not an automatic rubber stamp of who we vote for in November. It's not.
No.
And all kinds of terrible things could go wrong. And because those people identified to go and vote in the Electoral College, yes, they're usually appointed by the major political parties. But these delegates can actually vote for anybody they want to when they get there. Of course, if they vote in a way that the people that nominated them don't approve of, their lives in politics certainly, if not elsewhere, are over with forever. So, I mean, there's that public disapproval which will pass from word of mouth to word of mouth and your life will be over. But nonetheless, there are some, I'm just suggesting, folks, that there are some very important changes. And one is elimination of Electoral College. The other one, get rid of the IRS. There are better, fairer ways, use that word fair, to collect extra taxes from the people of the country to run our government. And one is called the fair tax, in fact. We've had people on the show talking about it. You'd have to do away with the IRS first, which means you'd have to repeal an amendment that created it. And then you'd put it in place. You'd put the fair tax in place. And it's basically a sales tax that would be national. And Canada has it. What is it? GVP or something that's added to every purchase in Canada. Since I was just there a couple of weeks ago with my family, I noticed, that's a lot more than the stated price. But and for hotels, of course. But of course, there's hotel taxes in big-time cities, too, that add on to the tax in Ontario and add on to the tax, the Canadian tax. So the federal government has taxes on everything in Canada.
You're talking about a provincial tax as well?
There may be. I know that Toronto is a city tax. There has to be a provincial tax, but I'm not sure if it's a sale tax.
No.
I'm not sure if they take the provincial tax as sales tax or some other way. But I'm just saying, okay, happy birthday, 19th Amendment. Women should have had equality in voting and many other ways before now. Remember, there was an amendment in the 1970s that would have given women equal rights and equal pay throughout the country, and that didn't get approved, which is really too bad, because it would have absolutely mandated equal pay for equal work, which in my weakened mind, I cannot understand why people wouldn't be in favor of that, unless it's some sort of male dominant sexism going on, you know, which, you know, shame on you. If the women are better than the men, let's get them in there. Okay, we need the best people we can get, whether they're male or female. Give us a break, folks. Let's not be so petty. So happy birthday, 19th Amendment, and League of Women Voters, thanks for reminding us about that. John, back to you.
Well, thank you, Jay. And speaking of prominent women, it's Dolly Parton's 70th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's a big thing we should always celebrate as well.
And have you been to Dolly Land in
After one
Tennessee?
Place, I've never been there, Jay. No.
Well, I finally found the one place you haven't been to. I just usually, every time I say, have you been there, John, to that state or that guy? Yes, I've been there. Oh, my goodness. And just recently, he usually says, too.
Well, but speaking of that, I went to a wedding last weekend where the gentleman who got married is now going to be the conductor of the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra. So I may be going in that direction pretty soon.
Did you learn how to play music at the School of Hard Knocks? No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay, forget it. All right,
I do want to talk. I'll give a little plug for Joe's Top Dog again. Okay. They are tonight is their Joe's our Jazz Night from 7 to 10, with the Rich Michaels Trio being the regular group, and tonight's guest is Shahida Nurullah, who is a very fine vocalist and. She has performed there in the past, and it should be a really nice night. And it'll be in the lounge area with a full bar, et cetera, and a little bit of different food to sample from. It's always a good night, always enjoyable. And okay. The last, also this weekend on Sunday, is our last on Gros Eel, the last concert on the Commons for the season. It seems that end of August is always the wrap-up times for these summer concerts. And we have a group called Al Alada and his banjo band. And Al has been around for a long time, and they're singers. He's a singer as well as a banjo player. Very fine.
And we mentioned that because the entertainment is free, folks, although... Yes, if you're thinking of eating, you could eat or drink there too. But we love free music whenever we get notice of that. And of course, it's become a really great venue for jazz and local jazz artists. And we love to support local jazz artists.
Yep.
And all local musicians, of course.
Yep.
Yeah, I just was looking also, since I happen to be a member, are the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, their email for this month. Does say that they're going to keep, in terms of the forum that they did, that's televised, they're going to keep that on their website and also at cityofdearborn.org, even though it has some candidates in it that are were eliminated. So for the 19th District judgeship, Susan DeBaja and Glenn Gene Hunt won the top two slots, but you'll also see, again, Abby Bazzi in it, but she didn't. She won't be on the November ballot. And for the people running for 19th District representative, there was 5 of the 6 Democrats and 1 Republican. But interestingly, the 1 Republican didn't win on the Republican primary. Terrence Guido Guerin won, and we hope to get Terrence on this show. We've been communicating. Well, it's one-sided pretty much for several months, and he hasn't been on this show. He did get on WHFR briefly on, was it the Sunday afternoon, August 7th?
Sunday, yeah.
He came to homecoming after much efforts on the part of John here to try to rope him in, but it wasn't the official interview. It was just some congratulations on winning your primary And some of our staff members were fans of his wrestling career, which I'm sorry, folks, I don't see, and I'm going to ask him forthright when he's here, and it's a fair question. But what does being a professional wrestler today have to do with being an elected representative? I guess one answer could be, and maybe he's taking notes if he's listening now, probably not, but it could be, you've got to please the people.
I was going to say, he's playing to the crowd. Yeah. You know, he wants to,
but well,
one way or the other, he's playing, he's trying to get a crowd to
I think everybody would agree that Donald Trump is doing that too, and he's playing to the crowd. He's an entertainer. He's a TV personality. He likes those high ratings. And of course, sometimes in politics, you got to make some tough decisions that are not popular, but they're actually, in your humble opinion, good for the public. And so you would vote your conscience, even if a lot of your constituents might not like it. Maybe they wouldn't even reelect you because of what you did, but sometimes that's important. We give that option to vote your conscience, and so it'll be an interesting 30-minute interview. We'll ask the same questions we asked the other candidates previously for the primary, of course, and we'll be extremely fair. But in terms of that experience issue, what does Mr. Guerin know about the legislative process, and how would he respond to pressure from lobbyists and the Republican Party and or a certain constituent group that might come to his office with signs or something? So I'd love to get him on the show, and I just sent an email yesterday, in fact, but we've tried phone calls and other methods of like showing up at his workout gym and so on that have not been successful yet. But now he's got the big time Republican place on the ballot.
Yeah.
Against Mr. Abdallah Hamoud on the Democratic side. And as far as I know now, I have looked up Green Party and Libertarian candidates for Michigan. They won't have any third parties challenging them.
Huh.
But of course, there might be a party other than the Greens and Libertarians that will sneak somebody in. We won't know for sure until after, I think, the third week in September. But what they say in, just to finish this point, the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights newsletter, they say they're not going to do another forum for that. But for the 19th district judge or the state representative. But it says plans are being made to hold forums for the local school board races where appropriate. So I don't know if there's a race in other communities than Dearborn perhaps would be, but so definitely in Dearborn it's a big deal. There's six people running for three slots, and so it's going to be a big influential election there one way or the other. Okay, so that's updating you and correcting what I said earlier also. Ooh, 10 minutes to go, and Kitty Love is already in the studio pulling the best of the blues for you, for us to have on the air from 2 to 4 o'clock, so stay tuned for Highway 61 in 10 minutes. John?
Yes, sir, Jay. I want to, while I have a chance, I want to highlight another gentleman who plays the music in the Downriver area, and that is on Saturday nights at Joe's Hamburgers. We have Benny of Benny and the Jets. Hmm. He performs every Saturday night there from 7 to 10, no cover charge at all, and lots of good things happen. They have a skee ball game there to play, and pinball as well, and a full-service bar.
Great. Okay.
And, also, because I wear red every Friday, I just want to talk about wearing red as a remember everyone deployed to honor our veterans overseas as well as those that have returned.
Yep. By the way, sneak this in at the end rather than the beginning. All opinions on this show that are expressed are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, administrators, or students, but we thank them for their support of our trying to be fair and yet still give opinions that might challenge you to think and research and then draw your own conclusions. Don't ever believe anything that John and I say for sure, including even some of the people performing at these venues. Double check to make sure the times and the places are right. It's always a wise thing to do, but never believe anybody on radio or TV who's spouting off. Even if you think, oh, they're an expert. Yeah, well, There's many points of view from many experts, too, on many issues. Congratulations, real quick. University of Michigan team wins the 2016 solar car race. That's University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. And this is a challenge here in America. It's called the American Solar Challenge. It's interesting. They have a picture. This was on the Green Car Reports, which is an email that I get every day. It shows them winning, but they're winning in the rain. The rain is pouring down. They got umbrellas out. So, but apparently their car can run during cloudy times because solar cells are getting better and better. But also, what's interesting, because but it's heavy, so it's amazing that they won. They carry a 5 kilowatt per hour lithium ion battery pack to store electricity when sufficient sunlight is not available. So they've got a heavy battery that will slow them down, but like if it's pouring down rain or something and it's very dark, they'll keep them going. And in fact, kept them going pretty well because they had the fastest times too. Now for this particular race, they've won it 8 times since the team was started, and this race was done since 1990. So a lot of engineers out there at U of M Ann Arbor who work, no particular department is credited with this, but there's probably some sort of like student club or faculty organization or something that's formed that work on the Solar Challenge. I know they also compete every 2 years in Australia. And last year, they didn't win, but that's the World Solar Challenge. Oh. And last year, it attracted 40 teams from 20 countries, and the solar car from U of M, again, won here in the U.S., the best in the U.S. again. Congratulations to that team, all the hard engineering work and driving that it took. You've got to be very steady at the wheel if you're driving a solar car for maximum range. So can't be making a lot of little side trips.
No.
But I thought it was great because they won the solar race and they're all standing around just pouring deluge of rain and umbrellas up everywhere and they still won. So don't think you know, solar cars of the future, don't think that you can only drive them when the sun's out. That won't be true at all. Won't be true at all in the future. The
storage capacity is only going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, Jay, you know you were talking about electric cars. Car dealers have battery chargers. Chevy dealers and wherever those cars are sold.
Oh, for the hybrids.
Yes, they are. They do have chargers at the dealership.
I would assume that they'd want to do that for the customers.
Sure.
Charge them up every time they bring them in for service or something. And hopefully they do that for free for a customer.
No charge.
But maybe you're paying for... Like with a hybrid, you still have to get an oil change every now and then, even if you don't use that gas engine too much. But I know a lot of car dealers have, in terms of other little perks, they will wash your car after you're in for service. Even just an oil change, they got a quick little washing thing set up. It doesn't take much. They just run it through like in 2 minutes. But still, that's a nice little perk. Good point to mention that most dealers of any of these cars, whether hybrids or electric, they will have chargers for free available at their dealership. I know most of the Nissan dealers that do this, they have outdoor chargers for their Nissan electric cars that you could, even if the dealership is closed, you can come in and get a charge. Again, because not all electric cars use the same charger connection. So,
well, and I saw even a service station in New Jersey, right by the Holland Tunnel. Not only were they doing full service gas pumping, but they had a charger with a long cord from the middle of their gas station. So you could go in and while you were getting your gas pumped, you could also get your battery charged.
Yeah. Real quick, this is a little advance notice, but the famous program called Yalla Eat, the culinary walking tours in Dearborn, they return this fall with Warren Avenue-based tour, and that's coordinated through the Arab American National Museum, and it's going to begin at 10 a.m. Saturday morning, September 17th. Participants can explore East Dearborn's Warren Avenue and visit a variety of markets, bakeries, and specialty food retailers, all founded by immigrants and family-operated. And it's a very, very popular tour. And Yalla Eat stands, it's Arabic for let's go eat. I don't know if the word eat is Arabic or not, but anyway, that's the title of it. So you can get more information at the Arab American Museum website, Yalla Eat. That's Y-A-L-L-A. Okay.
That was September 17th, Jay?
That's the first time that they're going to do it. They usually have to go to the Arab American National Museum website. You can sign up there. There's only so many people for each tour. They sign up very fast. So even if this goes on for 2 months, mm-hmm. usually on Saturday mornings, they might all be signed up by September 17th. So if you want to be part of that, it's really a fun and tasty thing to do, to also explore what's going on in Dearborn. Mm-hmm. And as a great culinary adventure. Okay, I've mm-hmm. got to go back to, in the time we have, two things real quick. I only got 2 minutes, so maybe we can't go too far back. Next week, Friday, mm-hmm. we will not be here. I will not be here, so John's not going to be here. I'm giving him the day off. He's going to enjoy that. Obviously, it's the start of the Labor Day weekend. But what we've found, what we've gotten from National Public Radio through our PRI affiliation, we can play two on-point shows. That's nationally broadcast radio discussion shows. Tom Ashbrook is the host of the show. It is run every morning on WDET. And a couple of weeks ago, they actually spent a full hour with the Libertarian candidate for president, Gary Johnson, and another full hour with Dr. Jill Stein, who's the Green Party candidate for president. Both of them will be on the ballot in Michigan and in a majority of states in the U.S. If enough people vote for them, they could win the presidency. Yes, it is true. So if you want all other choices, you want to explore, well, what do they have to say? I mean, I'm constantly amazed that people, now because of the Hillary and Trump candidacy is causing havoc in some people's minds, they don't know which way to go. The news media have actually given some airtime, cable TV, local TV, to Jill Stein and to Gary Johnson. And they're running mates. And I'm constantly amazed that I meet people, talk to them about the guy. Well, you know, I heard that Jill Stein talk. She's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And likewise, I've heard that Gary Johnson talk. Hey, he's fantastic. Wow. And so really, these people are totally qualified, in my humble opinion, to also be candidates for president. It's just, which way do you want to go? And are they spoilers? I don't think so. In fact, Gary Johnson in this hour got very, very feisty with Tom Ashbrook at the end. In fact, he got mad at him because Ashbrook suggested that there was nothing positive about him being a candidate. And that's absolutely untrue in my opinion, and certainly his opinion too, and Gary Johnson. So here's what's going to happen next Friday from noon to 1 o'clock, the on-point interview. Rebroadcast, actually, is going to be presented here on WHFR. I'm going to take that file and also toss it into, at least by when I come back after on Labor Day, I'm going to toss it into the podcast list on our website, because that's not normally automatically rebroadcast, saved as a podcast. But I'll put the Gary Johnson one there too. And, of course, the Dr. Jill Stein Green Party interview for the full hour from 1 to 2 o'clock will be there as of 2 p.m. next Friday. So you can listen to that anytime you want to. Encourage your friends. I mean, it's a big discussion. There's not just two candidates running. Any of the four top candidates, including Johnson and Stein, could win the presidency, even going through the shadowy, crazy, anti-democratic electoral college. So we want to give them a chance for that. Sorry, Reagan, Ford, I'm going to have to save your editorial for maybe 2 weeks. So if you're listening,